Test. Are we good? Oh, cool. The chat's in here. The latency's good. All right. Bye. Hey, everybody. Welcome back. This is my first stream back on YouTube in 3 years. Over 3 years.
Wow.
And essentially, the guy that was responsible, not responsible, but part of the reason I... No. Hey. Part of the reason I got banned was because, you know, the collaboration. It is true. I got two strikes. And then the first one back here is with the same man, Nick Fuentes. Welcome back.
Good to be back.
Yeah, happy to be here on YouTube. Sorry, we had a party difficulties. I think the groypers were too deep. And it seems like the website was working fine earlier. I just did a stream on party. But it's just the motion. The generational run is crazy right now. How are you doing, Nick?
I'm good. I'm chilling.
Should we explain why I have a tux on and you don't?
Yeah, let's do it.
So there was just an inaugural ball pretty close by. And it was the Young Republicans event. Matan was speaking there. He was hosting. I was luckily invited, and so was Nick. And then, you know, what happens to Nick happens. What happened?
Yeah, well, you know, they said I might be able to go, which they do every year at NYYRC. They say, well, we're working on it. We might be able to get you in. And they told me I was invited. I was going to be in the VIP section. I'm going to be a guest. And then, as usual, they canceled me. They disinvited me. They told me I can't come. I guess there was going to be a big revolt in the club if I was going to be there. But I already had my stuff booked, so I said, fuck it. I'll just come to New York and ball out anyway.
We got to hang out. We just had a nice dinner. Out of 10, how was it?
That was a 10 out of 10.
That was a 10? Let's go.
10.
Mm-hmm. That's good. Always good to catch up with Nick. It's always cool to see you when you're here in the city. And I'm glad you came, man. It's a white Christmas. It's snowing outside.
Yes.
Christmas. Yeah. I love Christmas. What are you? Do you
Me like, too.
I love Christmas. I always repeat that all the time. People are upset. I said Christmas is a... I did kind of rage bait a bit. I said it was a goy slop holiday. But there are some traditions in there. Like, there's no evidence, for example, that Christmas is Jesus' birthday, correct?
No. There's Christians who would argue that he was born on the 25th of December.
There's no biblical evidence of that, right?
I don't know. I mean, this is an argument that's been going on a long time, and books have been written about it. I haven't brushed up on the arguments why Christmas has to do with trees and is on the 25th and all that, but there's Catholics that have defended that.
Okay.
I don't know the arguments, though.
Yeah, I was talking about how, you know, the materialistic aspect of it, buying presents, you know, the reindeer has nothing to do with Jesus.
And well, the presents are biblical because the Magi give the gifts.
But it's been commercialized a lot. That's my point.
Yeah,
it's
okay, Charlie Brown. Yeah. Okay. It's America. You know, we buy stuff. We like to buy shit.
Well, that's my point, is that it's a holiday, but it's become more of a cultural thing than a religious thing.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, I agree with that to an extent, but the religion is the core of it. Without the Christ in the center of it, it loses its meaning.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because at the end of the day, Christmas isn't just about the trees and the ornaments and the gifts. It's about, even all the movies, it's about the spirit of Christmas.
It is. The Christmas spirit is palpable. You can see it in New York right now. I love it. I love the lights. I like the trees. I like the spirit. I love the family time. My family's Catholic. I go to church. I go to mass with them. I love it. But also today was SantaCon. And did you get to see some of SantaCon? My point is that culturally... Right, like all these people come in from Jersey, Long Island, Connecticut to get drunk in Midtown, put on Santa hats, mm-hmm. and they do a bar crawl. Mm-hmm. That's the part where it becomes less religious and just more of a cultural thing, you know, similar to most other American, like St. Patrick's Day, you know, an excuse to get drunk.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. I mean, there's like degenerates out there, but I view that as like a deviation from what Christmas really is. I mean... You know, it's like Halloween. People do that on Halloween.
I like Halloween. Halloween is a satanic holiday, but I like it. See, people...
But it didn't used to be. It's the night before All Saints Day is where it comes from.
Isn't that the day like right before all the evil spirits are outside right before the Saints Day?
Something like that, yeah. Because November 1st is All Saints Day. It's a holy day of... I think it's a holy day of obligation. So, you know, and that one, there's like a lot of Catholics who will say you should dress up as like saints for Halloween. I'm like, that's really lame, though. Like, there was this Catholic guy named Mike Voris who I talked to once, and he said, on Halloween, we should dress up like popes and the apostles and the saints. I'm like, yeah, but kids want to be like Anakin. Kids want to be like a Transformer.
Spider-Man.
Or, Ninja Turtle. Mm. Like, that's kind of don't all the saints, aren't you just going to be in like medieval clothes anyway? It's like all going to be the same costume. So. Mm-hmm.
And then the adults, it's turned into, you know, you see what the women wear. You see.
Yeah,
what, like,
yeah. It's a big horror holiday.
But regardless of Christmas and the event today, which was, I had fun there. I enjoyed it. You should have came.
Yeah, I wish I was.
Nah, that sucks. That's very unfortunate. But you've been on a crazy run this year since it feels cool to be back on YouTube.
Mm.
First saw you 3 years ago. You were there knifing the camera, and you were talking about how horrors are ruining society. And yes. I'm like, this is dope. I sent you the first clip recently where I first saw you, and I always had a positive reaction. We did a lot of streams on YouTube when I was really at the peak of my popularity, and then kept doubling down, tripling down. And now you're here. You've had a crazy, crazy year. It's coming to a close. The beefs are warming up. But not only that, it seems like the pushback has quadrupled in a response to how much you're growing.
Yeah. Well, it always goes like that. It's always like I do really well. I blow up. I'm getting popular. And then in equal measure, the pushback and resistance and the haters, the attacks, then kind of trails that just slightly. So... it's been an unbelievable year. I mean, and I guess the way that I look at it is similar to you, I was on a trajectory where I started in 17 and it was all on the up, 18, 19, 20, 21. And then I got nuked from orbit after 21, after J6. I got banned from everything.
No fly lists, bank accounts.
Yeah, the whole deal. And it took me like 4 years to claw my way out of that. And the country changed, you know, because of the pandemic and BLM and all that stuff. The country literally changed. And for the first time, censorship moved in the opposite direction, where it's opening up instead of closing down. And so 2025 was the first full year that I'm on Twitter. My clips aren't banned on Instagram. I can go on YouTube like we are now as a guest. Consequently, people were ready for the message at the same time. So it's kind of just like the perfect storm.
Everything coming at the same time. And you've had a lot of huge collabs recently. So it's you're coming. Last time I saw you, I remember bringing up Tucker Carlson. And it was like, yeah, something. And I didn't sense right there, okay, he's going to go on the Tucker Carlson podcast.
Mm-hmm.
And then we had Thanksgiving dinner. We had shared Thanksgiving dinner together. And there I became aware that you were going to do the Piers Morgan show.
Yes, yes.
Which was super. So you're coming off of some huge, huge, huge collabs. And then you've all seen the response, but I was saying at dinner, it's like long lasting. You did a great job on this podcast, not to glaze, but you did it. It's going to stand the test of time. So
thank you.
How have you, what's the back, since then, since you did all these shows, you could see, you know, what Piers is saying. And I've seen people start talking about his family because he started talking about your family. You know, I see some weird things that I don't really want to get into. Maybe you, if you want to. And then Tucker, it's like you were beefing. It was like, I am America. And it was CIA. That was dope. I remember sending you the recording of that live. I was like, oh, this is dope.
Thanks. Yeah.
And then now you're back on bad terms. I saw he dissed you recently on a new tech podcast. So what is that like? What's his, you know, you're cool with Candace. And then what is really happening right now?
Well, I think that, you know, at the end of the day, I am the alternative. You know, like alternative is actually a very powerful word in the political lexicon, because basically after World War II, there's a consensus in Europe that because fascism created the war, maybe, and fascism was a reaction to communism, their doctrine was, it's called, there is no alternative. TINA, there is no alternative. Like the German Constitution is based on this. The European Union is based on this. And what that means is there's no alternative to liberalism. Center-left, center-right liberalism is the doctrine of Europe. There's no alternative to it, not on the right, not on the left, not far-right, not far-left. And so this is where in the American conversation you get the alternative right.
Mm-hmm.
You get in Germany the alternative for Deutschland, the AfD party. And I guess what I represent is I am the alternative. I'm the other option. And in contrast to liberalism, which says that everyone's a blank slate, which says that, you know, basically what all these people are, what they all have in common, Piers Morgan, Tucker Carlson, Candace Owens, where we disagree is that at the end of the day, they are liberals. And by that, I mean, you know, like Tucker, what is our disagreement? He goes on All In and says tribalism is evil. White identity politics is the same as BLM and, you know, Zionism and all the other identity politics. his position is we need these, like, universal principles, like, we're not going to harm each other, we're not going to steal from each other. As long as we're raising, everyone's raising their children with the same values, that we're all going to get along. And that's a liberal viewpoint. This is like blank slateism, individualism. My message is, no, there are distinct races. There are distinct genders. Like, the world is filled with distinction, and we have to act accordingly. So in other words, if America becomes majority non-white, it will be fundamentally different, because non-white people are different than white people.
Which is inevitable, right? I see the late-night talk show hosts like Jimmy Kimmel, Jimmy Fallon, they're almost celebrating the fact that whites are soon going to be the minority in America.
Right.
Something they're very happy about and excited about. Which, if you said that about another race, soon Jews will be the minority, blacks will be the minority. Mm-hmm. You wouldn't get an applause in the crowd.
Well, and what's funny about that is you'll see guys like Elon Musk talk about this. Because what I would say is that's anti-whitism. In the same way you got Islamophobia or racism, that's anti-whitism. And you'll see that guys like Tucker, Matt Walsh, Elon, they are anti-white. So they'll frequently talk about, oh, liberals hate white people. If the shoe were on the other foot, if people were saying this about black people, that would be wrong. And what they're pandering to is white grievance. Mm-hmm. White people have a grievance about how we're being treated, about mass migration. And you'll have these guys that are paying lip service to those grievances, but their answer to white grievance, their answer to anti-whitism is liberalism. Like, Tucker, Walsh, and Elon, they're not, like, they don't say immigration moratorium, we need to reverse the demographic decline, we need to stick up for ourselves as white people. They say, please, black people, stop playing identity politics. Please, Jews, let's all play by the same rules. And I guess what I would say is, if you think anti-whiteism is a problem, you need to be pro-white. Mm-hmm. I guess I sound like BLM. In other words, it's not enough to be anti-white. You need to be pro-white.
Right. I heard Logan Paul say the same thing, but for BLM.
Yeah.
Right, as a white guy.
But because it's recognizing that whites have distinct interests, and just like the other groups, we have a right in an open society, in a democracy, to advocate for those interests.
Right.
And I would say that, you know, as far as that is concerned, people say, well, no, we can't emulate their identity politics. We have to reject it. To that, I say you first. Mm-hmm. You want to abandon identity politics? Well, who's been playing it for 60 years? Immigrants, black people, Jews, women, gay people. Now everybody says, oh, whites are getting angry. Whites are becoming nativist. Oh, okay, let's all stop playing. I say you first, because we got here because everyone was playing it. White people are finally waking up, and now the Tuckers and the Walshes and the Elons want to come in and say, no, white identity isn't the answer. I say it's the answer until everybody's on the same page.
But I've seen Elon and Matt Walsh be very critical about Muslim immigration. They always talk mm-hmm. about how there needs to be less of that in Europe, and they seem to try to relate it to America, even though Muslims make up, what, 2% of the American population. Mm-hmm. If they're liberals, then why are they so vocal about that sort of immigration?
Well, I would say that, first of all, these guys like Elon, they're pro-India, but they're anti-Muslim, which is funny. And same in the UK. Tommy Robinson is pro-India, anti-Muslim.
Yeah,
and sure. If you're white, you're like, they're the same people, basically. Like Pakistan and India, when they declared independence, they were basically segregated by religion.
Mm-hmm.
India is a very diverse country, ethnically and racially. So why, in other words, why would you say, oh, Indians, come on in, Pakistanis, no. Like, and I think what that has to do with, of course, is that it's politically expedient to be anti-Muslim. And I know a lot of Muslims, like when I say that, it's a fact that it is politically expedient to be anti-Muslim because, you know, America has a strained relationship with some of those countries and because of our alliance with Israel.
Mm-hmm.
Israel has a gripe with Muslims. They want us to have a gripe so that, you know, we identify with their struggle and we support them in their fight. I think it's that simple.
I think you're the only one in the right wing that sees the PSYOP, mm-hmm. right? Because Netanyahu said publicly that he was going to invest money into the propaganda.
Yeah.
And it's always the playbook over the last 20 years has always been just call Muslims terrorists.
Yep.
Nonstop. After the Iraq war, after every war that we go to support Israel in the Middle East, they just blame radical Islamists. They did that with Iran as well. And everyone fell for it. everyone's starting to say, oh, they're talking about Dearborn, which is a non-issue. It's like, what, 100,000 people in this? They're not really bothering anyone. The crime's pretty low. Everyone immediately started to jump on that bandwagon, even though it doesn't really pose a threat. Even on Rumble, you know, I used to stream on Rumble, you stream on Rumble. I saw ads pop up. It's like, the radical jihadists. It's like these AI ads for boomers right next to Black Rifle Coffee. They're talking only about Muslim immigration. So the reason that's happening, is that all distraction? Because Alex Jones seems very annoyed by Muslim immigration. He's very worried about that. Mm-hmm. Does that actually pose a threat?
I don't think so, no. And I'll tell you why. It's funny you bring that up, because what you would say about Dearborn is that it's an enclave. It's an enclave where it's a smaller town and it's mostly Muslim. And you have sort of like a monoculture there.
Right.
But there are enclaves everywhere. And there's Jewish enclaves.
All over New York. And I don't see anybody talking about that.
Never.
New York City, there's neighborhoods in Borough Park and Crown Heights that are literally, they look like Israel.
Yes.
Like, they all wear their hats. They have their own police. They have their own bus station. They have their own schools. They have their own language. They don't, even though they're in New York City, they don't communicate.
Yeah.
And they're told that they only interact with each other. But there's nobody protesting that.
No. And it's everywhere, too. In New Jersey. No. I have never heard any mainstream person talk about this. There are, like, ultra-Orthodox colonies in New Jersey. I've never seen anyone document it, talk about it. I only know because I know people from New Jersey. Mm-hmm. And they say, oh, these Hasidic Jews are taking over this whole town. In Surfside, Florida, in Crown Heights, in New York.
Yep.
It's like you said, they have their own ambulances, their own police. They have, it's like an enclave. And so you say, okay, Matt Walsh, so what's the difference between that enclave and Dearborn, or Minneapolis, or Springfield, Ohio? And I do think there's something cowardly about it, because, you know, let's be honest. Like, the Haitians in Springfield, I know you're Haitian. You're also Muslim, so, you know, Dearborn or whatever.
Sakbasi.
But it's like, you know, it is the most egregious example, let's say, because Haiti is not doing so hot.
Right.
So it's
Trump
easy.
Trump said a shithole country, yeah.
And I get it, but to me, that's almost like punching down.
Mm-hmm.
There's something cowardly about it. I did a whole show about it. I'm like, Matt, why don't you talk about all the Jewish names in Hollywood and New York? He's going to name all the Muslim names in Dearborn. Okay, yeah, like, I see your point. Name all the Jewish names in Wall Street.
Well, I saw on Tucker Carlson, he said he doesn't care about Israel.
Yeah.
He doesn't care. He just doesn't want to talk about it. He doesn't care. Isn't that the right defense? Isn't he enlightened to not care about and only put America first by not caring about Israel?
That's total cowardice. Because it's like, you can't have it both ways. You can either, you got to oppose all of it, or, you know, you should just shut up in general. You know what I mean? Because it is cowardly to say, oh, I don't care about Jews running America, but Muslims running Dearborn? This is a red alert. This is, you know, this is a red flag crisis level.
Yeah.
So, I think it's very obvious what's going on there.
Same thing. I recently saw a major push, people talking about the Somali immigration. And you had a good talking points. Whenever Trump is losing support right now, he's more unpopular than ever. Mm-hmm. His approval rating is, how low is it right now?
It's I think it's like 41%.
And whenever he wants to get it up, he immediately says something racist, and he says something to create an us versus them mentality. Right now it's the Somalis. It's who's that congresswoman that he doesn't like?
Ilhan Omar.
Right? He's going really hard at them. Is that a major issue going on? What's happening with the Somalians?
That's another thing where, you know, I mean, I think the Somalians should be deported. Because it's so egregious. She goes up there in Congress and she's like, as long as I'm in Congress, you have a fighter for Somalia. And it's like,
yeah, that's ridiculous.
That's mirroring the Israeli rhetoric. Yeah. But here's what I will say about that. This is the classic Trump playbook. He gets unpopular with his base because he's terrible at governing. He's disorganized, not strategic. His team is full of fucking idiots and criminals. So inevitably, and I knew, this is why I didn't vote for him, I knew it was going to go in the toilet very quickly. Trump sees the approval rating collapse, he's unpopular, so then he goes and plays the greatest hits. Shithole country, fuck Muslims, you're garbage, fuck Somalia. And it's like, yeah, you know, we didn't elect you to be mean to these people, we elected you to fucking deport people. You know, but you can't do the deportations because that's hard. So instead, you're going to basically do the lowest common denominator. You're going to appeal to people's basest instincts and say, fuck the people we don't like.
Right.
And everybody goes, yeah. And it's like, okay, but you know, he did that last time. And, you know, we want to make America great again. We don't want to just be mean to people and, like, talk shit.
Yeah.
We want the deportations.
Yeah, he acts like he's still campaigning. Even when he's in office, he has the same rhetoric as if he's trying to run for office. And I noticed, too, they're posting a lot of edits. The ICE, the White House posting videos of cool ICE deporting people. Why haven't they released the statistics? How many people are actually getting deported? What's going on there?
That, it's funny you say that, because ICE is supposed to report every quarter how many people they deport.
Mm-hmm.
They're supposed to give weekly numbers and quarterly numbers. Do you know that ICE has not put out the number of deportations since Joe Biden was president?
And why is that?
Because they're low.
Mm-hmm.
So, and it's so funny because their press office, the White House press office, will put out numbers, but those aren't the official numbers. ICE has reporting requirements. They just don't do them. Because the government knows how many people it deports. They keep fucking track. That's a number they have. But it's so low, they won't publicize it because it's an embarrassment. It's probably like 300,000 for the year, which 10 million illegals came in 4 years under Biden. If you're deporting 300,000 to 400,000 per year, by the end of Trump's term, you've deported over 1 million people. It's nothing. So that's why they won't publish the numbers.
And you were the only person that was anti, I mean, again, I was very vocal about Trump. I said no war in Iran. I didn't mm-hmm. want that to happen. And then closer towards the election, I'm like, okay, I like the optics of me wearing a MAGA hat and debating Rabbi Shmuley and saying mm-hmm. America first, MAGA cannot happen by having dual allegiance to Israel. I like that. But you were the only one completely anti.
Mm-hmm.
And you faced a lot of heat for that. And I think that's why this year has been so successful for you. What makes... Do you have anything to say to those people?
Yeah, well, it's funny because everybody says, why is Nick so popular? Like, that's the big question. Like, why do people like him if he's a Nazi, if he's a piece of shit? And people say, oh, it's because, you know, so-and-so had him on the show, or because the economy's bad, or like whatever. But if you go back to the beginning of the year, I blew up initially when Israel bombed Iran. Because you remember when we were in Spain in May?
Yeah.
There was no generational run. It didn't happen yet. The generational run started in June when Israel bombed Iran.
And you were vindicated.
Yes. Like that. Everyone watched my show because I called it. I said, we're going to war with Iran. And so when that happened, people said, dude, he's like on the money. He's right about this. Then they watched the show and said, wow, this guy knows what he's talking about. Like his analysis is totally on point. That is what really initiated the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
And so I would just say to those people, it's like, you fucking fell for it again. You're mm-hmm. on the hamster wheel. You know, more than anything, my message is the people have to develop a political consciousness. I don't care if you're white, black, yellow, like seriously, Christian, Muslim. People need to develop a political consciousness and take their own side. And they have to stop seeing themselves as Republicans and Democrats because you're not on the fucking team. Like, they get elected, they make the money, they get the privileges, and every year, both sides get fucked. Everybody gets fucked.
Mm-hmm.
And so my message to being a right-wing guy and a white guy, Christian, my message to my people was, fuck Republicans. Don't vote for them. They don't do anything for us.
Mm-hmm.
And people go, oh, well, you're an ideologue. And, like, that's true, but more than that, I'm in favor of, we need a political consciousness as the people.
So why do you think that you weren't allowed at the New York Young Republicans event that just happened? Because I saw people that came up to me on stream saying, I'm racist. And that's mm-hmm. their thing. And people say, look, I have blackface. And they're showing me videos of them in blackface. What separates you? Is it the fact that you oppose the Republican Party so much? What's the real issue here? Because if it's racism, then they would be kicked out.
I think it's because I'm critical of Israel. Okay. You know, Jared Taylor was there. And I love Jared. I really do. I respect him deeply. And we have disagreements, but he's an admirable guy. But let's be honest. The reason that Steve Saylor and Jared Taylor, ironically, are becoming more mainstream in some ways or getting more acceptance is because they only talk about black-white race relations. They never talk about Jewish capture of institutions. And we know that that seems to be the thing you're not allowed to talk about. So I think that's it.
Yeah, it's – and Piers Morgan, this was huge.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There has been a lot of – that one had a lot more criticism, I think. Or no, after Tucker Carlson, they wrote Chuck Schumer passed something. He wanted to pass a bill in Congress that forces people to disavow you. Mm-hmm. Is that what it was?
It was like a resolution condemning me.
Is that even legal?
No, it's like non-binding. It's means nothing.
Okay, and then do you think the backlash was worse after Piers or after Tucker Carlson?
Definitely after Tucker, because Tucker's like whole mess. But what's funny is, like, Tucker brought me on, and, you know, I have a lot to say about that in retrospect. But it's funny that Tucker had me on, and everyone said, oh, that's a softball interview. Mm-hmm. And everybody said, why didn't you press him? Why didn't you ask him the tough questions? Why didn't you play his clips and ask him about things that he said? In other words, they thought, like, I got away with murder. Mm-hmm. Like, I was able to push my views unopposed, and he gave me a platform, and he's working with me. So Piers Morgan said, oh, all right. Well, I'll ask him the tough questions. I'll give him a proper interview, and I'll drill down on all of it. And nobody could say that he got cheated, because he was so disingenuous, so unfair. He was as malicious as possible. And it was probably better for me than Tucker. I think more people liked the Piers interview than the Tucker thing.
I agree. It's because people are so sick of the doubling down, the lack of doubling down. They're sick of the apologizing. Mm-hmm. Legacy Media, Piers was expecting you to come on. Same thing when I went on with Ye, was like expecting, like, I'm sorry about this song. I'm sorry about this. I meant it by that. You went on and just said, just looked, did that face. Yeah. Just this evil face, just horrified, looking like the pigeon lady in Home Alone. Yeah. And people love that. People are just sick of the alternative and what media forces you to do.
Well, and with Piers, it's interesting because I watched a lot of his interviews, his, like, hit pieces, and I got a little nervous, but I took away from it strategically that the power that Piers has is shame. He's sitting there like the judge or like the cop, the interrogator.
The moral leader.
Yes. And uses the moral language, like, aren't you ashamed? Aren't you guilty? Isn't that racist? And there's a psychological thing where you're sort of sitting there in the hot seat having to justify yourself and say, well, I'm a good person. Well, I'm a good guy. And I said, you know what? You're a tabloid journalist. You're a fucking sensationalist tabloid celebrity. Fuck you. Like, you're not a judge. You're not a lawyer. You're not smart. Like, who the fuck are you? You bring Rabbi Shmuley on and Dan Bilzerian to... Yeah, and I like Dan a lot, but it's like...
I like Dan.
It's polemical. he brings these people on to, like, scream at each other like it's SportsCenter. You know, like it's... who's the black...
Stephen A. Smith?
Yeah. You bring people on to go... Rah, 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 and you're going to sit there in judgment?
Yeah, yeah.
So the way that I flipped the script is I said, I'm going to have contempt. I'm going to be in contempt of court. You're going to sit there and say, how dare you? And I'm going to shit on the floor and piss on your face and say, I don't take this seriously. This is a joke. The Holocaust? Pff, that's funny. So that was the strat. That's how I played it.
Yeah, what I really like is this happened to me so much in the past 3 years when I was banned. I'm still AI banned on TikTok like you, face banned. So I have to get Twitch back, yada, yada. But during the YouTube ban, especially, when they would call up and they'd do these Piers Morgan type interviews, is it to be like, oh, you deny the Holocaust? You deny the... And then it's just, they just want you to say exactly this. And you said it perfectly. I was born in 1998. Why am I supposed to have emotional feelings towards something that didn't happen to my people over almost 100 years ago?
Right. You know? Well, yeah, it's just logic. You have to cut through. All of that is like sentimentalist programming. Because it just doesn't make any sense logically why you would feel shame over that. It's a social proof.
We didn't do it. Like, yeah. I wasn't there.
And it's history.
It happened.
World War II, 85 million people died in World War II and were hung up on the 6 million. And there were other people in the camps also. Yeah. I mean, Hitler put all his enemies in the camps, in concentration camps, concentrating them in one area. He hated Slavs. He hated Poles. And some Catholic priests and gypsies, but we only even ever talk about the 6 million, and people are going to feel shit. Oh, I don't deny that. It's so funny. I remember when I first started like denying it or whatever, you would have like stupid bitches say, he's a Holocaust denier. It's like, tell me even one thing about World War II. Mm-hmm. Like, you don't know fucking anything about anything. And you're like, this is a dogmatic view that 6 million died. It doesn't make any sense.
The most annoying part was when he tried to shame you because you said, have you been with a woman? You're like, no, I'm waiting till marriage. And Piers Morgan's also a white Catholic. So he knows that you're supposed to wait until marriage. Like, if you're going to follow moral consistency as the moral judge, then you waiting to be with a woman who's your wife, that's what you're supposed to do. You're one of the only people that I've seen follow that. publicly and not be ashamed of you. Like, yeah, I'm waiting. And he's still like doing this, like, oh, you're a virgin, the shaming thing, which is not even morally consistent with his own belief system.
Well, and that's probably my biggest weakness, because they're right. Like, I am a freak. Like, I am an eccentric freak, and I'm not a normie. But it goes to show that, that at the end of the day, that is all they have. Like, he brings me on to say, well, we're going to properly examine your beliefs. I'm going to put you in the hot seat, and I'm going to show that you either are a hater, or you're a simpleton, or you're a bigot, or whatever. And when all of that doesn't work, you played the Holocaust card, the racism card, this, that, the other. At the end of the day, all you have is to attack me as a guy. And what does that say about liberalism? Mm-hmm. You cannot defend liberalism intellectually. You cannot defend it mm-hmm. in the battle of ideas. You have to attack the purveyors of the alternative and their life.
The argument is just, oh, you're weird.
You know? Yes.
You're just, that's weird. Like a 20-year-old and a 25-year-old, that's weird. That's not a moral argument. That's right. Not even logical. You're just declaring that, and most people believe it for whatever reason. You call yourself a freak. I've got to hang out with you quite a bit. Thanksgiving, we just had dinner. And I've known you for years. What makes you a freak? What, that you don't want to go ice skating with some chick who's gonna, you know, ask you to pay for everything and nag you? Why do you think you're a freak?
Well, I think that I'm just not like I'm not a very social person, and so
you say that, I don't see it. You know, even really? Just now, yeah, we have it. It's gonna be in the vlog that we post. People were coming up to you. These girls were taking photos. Nick's taking a photo with the girl. She's like, I didn't like that one. And she's like putting her, she's all excited. I don't see you as antisocial as you let on. No.
Well, I think I'm good at like interactions and stuff, but you know, I am a bit of a loner, and I'm a monomaniacal person. Like, I am obsessed with politics. And I think people don't get that. People always want to get to the mystery of like, who is the person? Like, what does your day look like? Mm-hmm. What do you do for fun? People ask me questions like that, and I feel like SpongeBob when he says fine dining and breathing. You know, yeah. It's like, what do you mean? Like, I'm not. So I guess that's why I say I'm not like a chill, normal dude that is going to go and get a beer with you and, you know, oh yeah, I smoke a little bit sometimes and I'm like a normal guy. You know, I'm preoccupied with this.
See, I don't like the word freak. It's also just that you don't cave to your vices. And that's partly why Chuck Schumer is saying that you have to be condemned, because you can't get honeypotted. Mm-hmm. You're not going to get got with drugs. You're not going to get got with women. They're not going to tempt you with some sort of deal. You can't be bought or sold, and you can't get got. That doesn't make you a freak. That just means that you have specific morals that you're not going to bend to. And I think it's freaky to so many other people because they get into this for other reasons.
That's true. Well, and so many people have met their end because of stuff like that. That's always what gets people fucked up, is especially because of what I do. It is such a, there's so much pressure around this that if you have problems with like alcohol or drugs or whatever it is, then that really exacerbates every other underlying problem. You know, so it's like, for example, you know, let's say I had a family. Let's say I have a wife. If somebody comes to my house with a gun, that could like ruin my marriage.
They have leverage.
Yeah. And if I'm a drinker, let's say I'm having trouble with my family, they're fucking with my family, I'm depressed, okay, now I'm turning to alcohol and drugs to cope.
Jordan Peterson.
Boom, exactly. So, you know, people underestimate it takes a certain type of person to raise a flag against the system, and you kind of have to be monomaniacal.
I think a lot of people see the writing on the wall, and this is the playbook of many world leaders. I know when I say, you know, I said at Fuentes rally too, I think this guy's going to become president. You know, they have that in my Wikipedia. But your obsession and just your dedication to the cause, that's the natural path of a future world leader. Do you disagree?
Yeah. I mean, I would say more than a world leader, a revolutionary.
Okay.
I think that's that if you're a revolutionary, you have to be that way. It's because, you know, to be a world leader, all you got to do is be groomed and be obedient to the interests or
true.
Whatever. But to be a revolutionary, yeah, you kind of need to be possessed in a sense. Mm-hmm. And by possess, you know, not, I don't mean that in, I'm not gesturing towards anything supernatural, but I mean, you need to become a vessel. You need to almost become more, like you almost lose your humanity in a sense, because you become kind of like the living embodiment of your ideas, of your vision. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what it takes.
What about Candace Owens? This is always popping up on my timeline. You had our collab, it did not go well.
Yeah.
I don't think so. You guys were, it was a little bit hostile, uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm.
And since then it's been, she signaled some good things, like saying that she likes that Nick is resisting the Zionist influence. But mm-hmm. now it seems like it's heating up a lot, especially with Charlie Kirk. And I see the disagreements with Ian. What's going on? Are you guys ever going to find some common ground? What's happening there?
Oh, Candace, you know, she's really something.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what is going to happen with her. We're like fire and ice. I mean, I think that she, at the end of the day, I think she's actually in love with me.
Come on.
No, but I really do. I think she, look, no one could deny we had chemistry. No one can deny.
She's happily married, you know.
Yeah, well.
She's happily married.
The heart wants what the heart wants. No, but she.
The That's So Raven stuff was so funny. It's like she was.
You know, she had a vision.
Yeah, that was.
I just had a vision. Chels, Eddie, I just had a vision.
Chels, like
Charlie. Dude, do you watch That's So Raven back in the
day? I did. It would zoom into the eye, and she had. Yeah, it's funny because she's also black. Like, that's why. That's what makes it better. It's yeah. the black woman dream thing.
Yeah.
But.
So good.
I see that they're really annoyed. It seems like there's this feud about what happened to Charlie Kirk, which seems like the second biggest catalyst in your year. Unfortunately, rest in peace to Charlie Kirk.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I disagreed with him heavily. I did the day before you said, and you guys went to war with each other mm-hmm. ideologically. Him passing away, it seemed like that was the second major event, especially after the Trump nuking Iran mm-hmm. or bombing Iran. What has transpired since then? What's the deal with Erica Kirk? I saw she was recently saying Charlie Kirk spoke Hebrew, and she sang Shabbat Shalom. She had the Israeli star here. What's happening with this situation?
Well, so Monday is really when it blows up, because Turning Point is going to address all the conspiracies in a live stream this coming Monday, so in 2 days. And I guess Candace is going to react to it. And honestly, I'm not taking a side in it. And here's why. One, I have taken a side on what transpired. I think Tyler Robinson killed Charlie Kirk. And people say that's Fed slop. That's the FBI's narrative, blah, blah, blah. I think that the radical left is real. Like, left-wing people are out there killing people. And I not only do I not think it's far-fetched, I think it's likely that some hick lib, tranny lover, autist got a gun and fucking shot him. Because Charlie Kirk is in the culture war against LGBTQ and the anarchists and whatever. I think that's totally likely, actually. I haven't actually even seen a credible alternative theory. You have all these, like, little things they say about, oh, there's an Egyptian plane and these people in maroon. It's like, but what's the theory? Who's the suspect? Where's the other murder weapon? Like, they haven't produced anything like that. So I do think that Tyler Robinson killed him. As far as Erica and Candace are concerned, I can't take a side in that because I have issues with both of them. I think that Turning Point did kind of opportunistically take advantage of Charlie's murder. I think that's obvious. Their big, like, memorial.
Fireworks everywhere. She's wearing leather pants. And
yeah.
The way she's hugging J.D. Vance is a little... It's a bit much, you know.
Yeah, and she's... You know, look. Everybody grieves differently. Totally valid.
Okay.
And honest to God, I pray for her and for her family. You can't even imagine. She's got two kids, now without a father.
It's a tragedy.
It's horrible. And I really feel for her. That being said, she is clearly acting. When she goes on these shows, it's so canned. Mm. Like, and we just have to be honest. She's doing she's in the interview with Barry Weiss. And Barry goes, what do you have to say to Candace Owens? And she goes, stop. That's it. She goes, that's it. That's all I have to say. It's like, come the fuck on. And the handkerchief.
Yeah, I know. And she's always like, this strategic Mad amount on. Of tears. Oh, my fungal.
I mean, the handkerchief. Come on now. And it's like Ben Shapiro's hat. It's getting bigger. She's going to have like a fucking, beach towel next to it. But we shouldn't joke about that. I do feel for her. But Turning Point is doing a very bad job. Because look, I think I have my criticisms of Turning Point, but they have a right to defend themselves because they're being accused of, like, murdering her fucking husband. That's a very serious accusation. Candace is saying that she murdered her fucking husband and the father of her kids. That's a very serious charge that, if real, if you're not sincere, it's like an evil lie.
Yeah.
And I think that Turning Point, they should be sticking up for themselves. They're just not doing a good job of it. It's very bad PR. It's too calculated. It's inconsistent. It's all over the place. That being said, I think Candace is extremely dishonest also. I think she plays fast and loose with her theories. I don't think she has a lot of intellectual integrity. And I think she's sort of a narcissist. I think that at this point, it's hard not to say that this has become a grift. Every week, she goes on Instagram. This changes everything. Tune in tomorrow. Oh, this just changed the whole conversation. Watch my show next week.
Yeah. I like Candace, but it's like I didn't... Well, she shouldn't have posted text messages showing that Charlie was listening to Nicki Minaj.
Mm-hmm.
That was like a little bit... If I die, please don't show that. I like Monster. I like that verse that she had on Twisted Fantasy, but don't...
Yeah.
You know, him like fangirling over Nicki Minaj.
He goes,
like,
yes.
Much. Yeah.
Yes,
I don't see,
bitch.
I don't want to know
love
that.
Monster.
I don't want to know that, man. Like, maybe keep that. But hopefully she gets on, you know, is able to figure this stuff out. Do you think that Erica's trying to reposition Charlie's Israeli position? Because it seems like towards his death, Charlie was critical. He went on the Patrick Bet David show and he's questioned what happened on October 7th very publicly. And he was there with Megyn Kelly, I think one of his last podcasts, saying that he was getting bullied and that you have to have complete allegiance to the Israeli lobby. It seems like Erica is trying to reposition and change the narrative to make it seem like he was fully supportive of Israel. And also they met in Israel. They met in a pilgrimage. I didn't know Christians go on a pilgrimage to Israel, but apparently they do. They didn't meet in America and in a cornfield or underneath the bleachers at a football game. They met in Israel.
Well, and you know what else is weird about her? She's like 6 years older than him. Isn't that weird?
That, I don't often see marriages like that.
She's 37. He's 31. And, you know, if you're Charlie Kirk, you're rich, you're famous, extremely powerful. They get set up and she's 6 years older. Like, so I said that from the start, that it seemed that their marriage was perhaps arranged. And it's, I don't know what her deal is, but the guy that seems to have gotten powerful at Turning Point is Andrew Colvett. And Andrew Colvett, he's kind of holding down the fort on the Charlie Kirk show. He comes from Salem Media. Salem Media is like a big Zionist outfit. Marissa Strait works there. She's she runs PragerU. She's that Unit 8200 officer who's at PragerU. And Salem also got that contract with the Israel lobby. They registered under FARA, $6 million contract to lobby with Israel with Brad Parscale.
$6 million contract?
Literally, yeah, $6, $7 million, something like that. It's in that ballpark. Very good. Nobody says. but yeah, so they seem to be steering Turning Point hard back into the... And Colvett was on Ross Douthat on the New York Times podcast saying... You know, it's okay to criticize the foreign aid, but you must verify that Israel has a right to exist, kind of echoing their line from SAS in July. I will say, I think it's overblown, the extent to which Charlie was turning on Israel. I think that's basically fake.
You don't think he was turning on Israel?
No.
Okay.
I think that it's, and I've explained it a lot of times on my show, but I think that what happened with Charlie is that this, first of all, we have to understand, he was everything to everybody. Turning Point made $140 million because he was a brown noser. He was a grifter. He was very good at milking donors for money. And he, like Trump, is a contradiction. Like, to the far right, he was becoming anti-Semitic. To the Israel lobby, he was their one of their only remaining allies. And so I think that you have to consider that Charlie, being a youth leader, he had to go on the campus and defend Israel to all these college kids that are becoming groypers. And I think that that wore on him. And I think he got frustrated. I think he was going to the Israeli donors and saying, well, I'm getting killed out here. You know, I'm not being glib when I say that. But like he's going saying, I'm getting grilled for being pro-Israel. It's hurting my reputation. I have to defend this shit. And he said in his letter to Netanyahu, he goes, I think I'm defending Israel more than you're defending yourself. And so I think he was really put between a rock and a hard place, because the Israelis were completely intolerant of guys like Tucker and stuff like that. And Charlie needed to keep those people happy, needed to keep the college kids on the plantation. So I think he was just kind of being tugged in two different directions and being ripped apart I don't think he was like an ideologue who had an epiphany and like realized Israel's a problem and anything like that. I think that's overblown.
And you were right about J.D. Vance. I remember the last stream, maybe the last desktop stream we did, we were in my Miami apartment, and it was the day before you got unbanned on Twitter.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember you said, Elon, give me my fucking Twitter back. And you got it back. And one of the major thing you said, I had told you that I think Ben Carson was going to get the VP nomination. You're like, no, it's J.D. Vance. Remember, I'm not going to say who. Somebody told me that tip. He's like, oh, put all your money on this. He's going to – I don't gamble, but I think he lost a lot of money. And you were right. J.D. Vance got the nomination. It seems like they are trying to position him to – maybe take some of Charlie Kirk's empty spot, but
yeah,
also as the next leader of America. What's the truth about this guy? You're the only person to really expose the fact that he was in the Senate for only 2 years, and then he got VP. He was a never-Trumper. I remember that. Mm-hmm. He was very vocally anti-Trump, and now he's, you know, the biggest glazer for Trump. What's the truth about this guy? He has some weird connections going on. J.D. Vance is a fake name. He was part of that Yale group. He's getting funded by Peter Thiel, who has CIA connections. Peter Thiel is gay, right?
Yeah.
And he's, you know, he's bankrolling AI right now, funding the end of the world. He's giving J.D. Vance $15 million. What's going on here?
Well, I mean, it's such a big can of worms with Vance, but I would say that in particular after Turning Point, here's what I found really fascinating. So you remember, I forget what event it was at. They went to the White House for Erica to receive the Medal of Freedom on Charlie's behalf from Trump and Vance. And I don't know if it was there or if it was at a different event. I think Vance did a Turning Point event and Erica was there. And remember, Erica gave him that really affectionate hug where she like held the back of his head. And everyone said it was super weird. And she said on the stage, she said, you know, no one can fill my husband's shoes except for Vance, basically. And people said, well, that's obvious what that was. Also, Vance really leapt in front of Charlie's death. Like, he carried Charlie's casket, had him buried with honors or whatever. He had the military fly the casket. He went on Charlie Kirk's show the week after the assassination. So that was kind of like one flavor. Then Tucker interviewed me at the end of October. Now, Tucker's son, Buckley, works in Vance's press office. So when Tucker interviewed me, the Israel lobby put the screws in Vance. They said, what is your connection to Tucker? Are you going to fire his son? You need to disavow. You need to show that you stand with Israel against the Groypers. So then, last week, Erica was being interviewed. And they said, do you think J.D. Vance should be the next president? And suddenly, completely frosty tone, Erica says, well, you know, let's just appreciate that Trump is president. And, you know, my husband fought to get Trump in office. She wouldn't answer. So you go from she's hugging his head. He's the only one that can replace. If I grabbed his ass, that would have been less controversial. But then after the Israel lobby turns on Vance, now she goes, oh, I don't know if he should be the next president. That is weird as fuck. And I tweeted the video. It's on my Twitter timeline. It's so, whatever that is, it's weird. And something's up there.
What do you think is the truth about Erica Kirk?
I think that she is an extremely ambitious person. And like I said, I think it was an arranged marriage. I think she is somebody who wanted to marry political royalty. He needed a wife.
Mm-hmm.
They were set up.
By who? Who arranged it? They met in Israel.
Who knows? The powers that be, the fixers, their handlers, you know, whoever. Because when you're a Charlie Kirk, when you're an Erica, you swim in that school of fish, you know, with connected people. You don't even know who's beside you sometimes. And so they were put together. They say that Erica applied to work for Turning Point, and that's how they met. That's a crock of shit.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that now that Charlie's dead, they're trying to groom her to be some kind of political figure. And mm-hmm. and they're creating... The reason I think that is because they're choreographing these breakout moments. I forgive the killer. That was a choreographed moment. That's like an Obama-esque West Wing, House of Cards, as cynical as it gets. Here's your white dress. Here's your husband's memorial. You're going to forgive the killer. And everyone is going to say, oh, Erica's amazing, whatever. So, like, they're like grooming her for something, I think.
That is even though I could see your argument there, that is what you're supposed to say as a Christian. You're supposed to forgive your enemies.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so there's some respect there.
No.
No.
Because she doesn't. I don't think she does.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think anyone could. I mean, let's say your husband got murdered in cold blood, and a week later you go, I'm over it. I forgive him. Like, as Christians, you don't just freely forgive everybody. Sometimes it takes time, and the person needs to be repentant, and even then, you don't exonerate that person. Mm. So, you know, I thought it was ridiculous, because here's how I feel about it. Either she meant it, in which case it's kind of fucked up. It's like, if my wife... Imagine if you got murdered and your wife came out a week later and was like, I forgive his killer. You'd be like, I'm sorry, you're not angry still? You're not, like, upset? And if she's lying, then that's, like, really evil to say you forgive him when you really don't, because it's like you're just, you know.
I appreciated some of that because, and I see what you're saying, because it felt really tense at the time.
Mm-hmm.
I remember you were supposed to come to New York or something, and I was, after a while, I said, I'm going to abandon the Woman to podcast. I'm not going to. You know, maybe I'll leave New York. I thought the political violence would triple. It seems like it really died down quickly. Mm-hmm. I think we were all political commentators, especially those public and especially those considered on the same atmosphere as Charlie, were nervous. But stuff like that, I think, did warm. I think it did cool down some of the heat.
Yeah, I mean, that is true. I mean, that was kind of an important thing to do at that time. But and by that, I mean to... you know, get everybody to get level-headed. But I think at that point, it was sort of past the point. It was like a week and a half later.
And even then, I can understand why someone like you, the amount of heat that you have to face, and even then, I don't know if you want me to talk about it so much, but I saw you have to pay $635 for this phone. It's just like the stuff that you have to deal with and the amount of – do you think it's – do you ever wonder, like, when can I get out of this? Where is the light at the end of the tunnel? Although you've had a phenomenal year, and I think everyone in the chat can, we could say congratulations. It's really cool to see the progression. How are you able to deal with all this stuff? You know, like some lady comes to your house and then you have to, you know, pay for the phone, and you're facing, you do a good show and immediately they try to tear it down.
Mm-hmm.
How are you, personally, how are you dealing with all this stuff?
Well, I love to fight. All real Americans love to fight, so I live for it. I live for the constant war, for the constant battle. So I'm fine with it, and that's kind of just what you're in for. You know, if I wanted to be beloved, if I wanted to be to have kind of an easygoing life, I just would have worked for Daily Wire 10 years ago, you know?
We would have taken the deal.
But I was born for the fucking struggle. I was born for the war. So I'm in it. I'm locked in for the Groiper War, and, you know, I'll rest when I'm old. If I can live to an old age, that's when I'm
going to. You're just a white ass nigga going hard as fuck.
I'm a white ass nigga going hard as fuck. All day, yeah.
Yeah. My nigga, man.
Let's go. My nigga.
I mean, so you're not going to take the gambling deal? Have you been offered any crazy deals? I'm sure since like this blow up, you've been proposed with some crazy numbers to change your rhetoric or to push an agenda.
I've been offered millions of dollars this year for different sponsorships. I mean, I got a gambling offer. I got a gold offer, which I might do, by the way.
The gold one, yeah.
Because gold is, but I haven't taken it. I'm going to ask my audience if they're okay with it. But I got offered that. I kind of turned it down. And then I got offered like $250,000 to debate Candace Owens. Somebody hit me up. They said, would you debate Candace Owens? We're going to pay you $500,000 or $250,000. We'll pay her $250,000. I said, don't give that bitch any more money. I said, no, I don't. I don't take the money because I don't want her to get the money. So I turned.
She has
it
all
down.
These legal. If she needs Macron sooner, man. She might need it.
She's gonna owe fucking $1 billion to him.
And you said no. Can't to that.
Wait. Yep.
But you should be doing well. The super chats are going up. But I watch your show very frequently. I can see it's starting to become aggravating. You know, the people. I noticed the difference. I've been around for a long time, and the TTS used to be the same couple people. You recognize the names. And now it's these people in Ohio and Wyoming that are like. What, 271,000?
Yeah, yeah.
What about the guest? It's just like, I can see how that... Do you ever want to just escape?
Yeah, I want to just stop dealing with human beings. I want to go underground or like to the North Pole or something. Because, yeah, I mean, The problem is a movement gets so big. I was just talking to my buddies about this. Probably 70% of Groypers came around this year.
Yeah.
And you think about it, it's like, I've been doing this for 10 years, and now the number of people that discovered me this year outnumber the people that have been around like 10 to 1. Mm-hmm. And it's like, it's just kind of hard because I've been in it, struggling, fighting, refining. And then you get these people, like you said, they're like,
oh, the Holocaust is fake, well,
whatever, you know, whatever goofy shit. And you're like, yeah, that's hilarious. Mm-hmm. I remember when I had my first beer, you know, like, yeah. I remember when I did that for the first time. So it's a little irritating now.
Yeah, so I saw you talk about, not to get too personal, but you said you were going to take a vacation soon. It's been a crazy year. You're always traveling. You're doing these collabs. Are you able to take your foot off the gas? So like, what is that responsibility like now? You're leading a new movement, the new American right. Even your lack of presence at this event, this Republican event, it's very obvious. Everyone's thinking about it, right? It's especially after Charlie Kirk. Everyone knows that you now carry the baton for the future of the American right. It used to be they would ignore you and they wouldn't say your name. They would kind of hint at it or say undercover codes. Now they're just saying it and they're trying to cope with the fact that you are clearly going to lead the American young right. What is that responsibility like now? You're 27.
It's tough. I mean, the biggest thing is it's a lot of endurance. You know, because like I said, I've been fighting for 10 years. And by that, I mean, there's no weeks off. I've never taken more than a week off for 10 years since I started this. And it's like, you know, when January 6th happened, I said, I literally can never miss a show for more than a week. Because if I do, people stop going to my website. If I'm not on YouTube and Twitter, if I am not visible, people forget about me and stop showing up.
You're virtually dead.
Right. So, you know, having to constantly keep up the momentum, constantly like being visible, being present, it's exhausting. It's a lot of travel, a lot of content, you know, and having to deal with the hate and the different ops that are being ran against me. It's a lot. It can be overwhelming at times. And that's when you gotta... That's why I have a lot of indulgences, you know, the fast food.
That's compared to most people, because you say, like, oh, I'm going to take a vacation. Most people, like, maybe go to Cancun or resort, get a girl and the drink and just get, you know. I can't imagine you spending more than 3 days relaxing. What do? You go to a hotel and you're like, I like a bathtub in a hotel.
Literally.
What do you like? I can't even imagine what you would do.
Literally. I literally go in, like, a hot tub, and that's it. I go in the hot tub. I watch movies. I play Call of War, my favorite. People were saying, he's a fed. It's Call of Duty, not Call of War. No, Call of War is its own game. It's a grand strategy game. Uh-huh. I just love staying in a hotel and I just chill in a hotel for like a week.
Even Thanksgiving, where they're or flying to LA, you know, it's nonstop. But it seems like I think you'll be able to. I got to talk to you at dinner about that. It seems like you're handling it, and it doesn't seem like it's weighing on you too much, because like the amount of heat, I'm sure people in the chat have seen it. It's like, how is one guy, especially when Piers Morgan starts talking about family, it's just that there's got to be some sort of, it seems like there's a lack of humanity with you. Not with you, but with the way people treat you, you know, like talking about, like, what do they say on that news that you should do like your daddy and kill yourself?
Yeah,
like
follow your leader.
What?
Kill yourself.
Like, literally like on national news saying kill yourself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, you have to be calm maxing. You have to be smirking at all times. It's like Trump. You know, they said to Trump, how do you deal with the pressure? And he goes, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
He said, an earthquake happens in India, 400,000 die. It doesn't matter. Nothing matters, he basically said. And it's, you know, you do have to kind of let go. And you kind of just have to, you have to be smug like Pepe. You know, you just have to be like, whatever.
Yeah.
You know?
I have to give respect to Trump for that. I'm surprised he did it. I'm sure you saw the clip. He was leaving a helicopter and he was asked about you.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, Tucker can talk to whoever. And it's like, you've been attacking this guy. You're just like, you're fat. You're old. You're washed.
Yeah, yeah.
Fuck you. And he's like, it's okay. And I realized then that Trump really does approach this as if it's theater, which it is.
Mm-hmm.
The same thing. It was so similar to when Trump met Mamdani.
Mm-hmm.
And Mamdani, his campaign, Mamdani said, I'm going to be the biggest headache for Trump. I'm going to, you know, ruin his legacy. And then they're there smiling and hugging and being best friends in the Oval Office. Is that the right approach to see that when everyone's campaign, when people are campaigning, they're not really themselves. It is a performance.
Mm-hmm.
Some people call it grifting, but that's what politics is. It's theater. Is that true?
It's a game. Everything is, people have to realize this is something that's kind of like, it may seem obvious or, you know, banal to say, but it does need to be said. You and I right now are in front of a camera. There is a camera in our faces. As Piers Morgan said, we are staring down the barrel of a camera, and that is how people are seeing us. We are both cognizant of the fact that we are in front of a camera on the internet, and you cannot not be cognizant of that. You cannot not be self-conscious of that. And the very fact that the camera is here makes us act differently, speak differently. We all know why. We have to be calculated. We have to be cognizant of privacy, security, the relationships we're trying to maintain. But people don't think of that. People forget the camera is there, and they think that they're looking through a portal at two people having a private, normal interaction, but they're not. They're looking at people on camera that to one degree or another are performing. Yep. And so people would do well to keep in mind that you're not looking through a portal. You're watching something that was made for public consumption, whether that's a campaign, media, politics. And again, that might sound asinine, but it's really important to understand like how media works, why things are the way they are.
And Trump understands that almost better than most politicians, his ability to separate that. Did that surprise you? Do you think that you'd ever be able to? Because he was very happy to see you at that Thanksgiving dinner 3 years ago, mm-hmm. right? He said he was impressed. Do you think that you'd be able to squash it the same way Mom Donnie did?
Maybe. I don't know that anyone would let me near Trump.
Probably not, no.
You know, his handlers would prevent that. But, you know, never say never. Who knows? But I would certainly – look, I have always maintained great respect for him as a guy. But, look, it's been a total train wreck and a disaster. I don't even know what the value would be in something like that at this point. But yeah, I mean, I think it would be similar to the Mamdani meeting for sure.
How does the Epstein situation get resolved? I've seen there's more pictures coming out, more reporters are asking about it. This is probably the biggest stain on his legacy because, you know, the war in Iran, that's a little more, you have to be geopolitically aware to understand that. This one is a stain on his reputation. Does that ever get, does the situation find an end?
No, I don't think there will be any finality to it, anything climactic. I think that it's like everything else. People are just going to move on and not really care. Like, Trump was the father of the vaccine. Mm-hmm. And so you think all those people would come out and say, we're not voting for Trump. He made the pandemic. People don't give a shit. Mm-hmm. So it is a setback. It's a temporary humiliation. But like everything else, it will blend into the
people
background.
Are going to forget about this. And it's crazy if you said this maybe 10 years ago that there'd be an island, like a pedophile island that all world leaders were connected to that have pictures with the front runner. And that everyone would forget about it, we'd laugh. Mm-hmm. So many of these Black Mirror episodes have ended up becoming true. And I think that's what's going to happen as you continue your rise and the space you have now in the political sphere. People are coming so disillusioned with the current regime, with the power structures. The lack of trust is stronger than it's ever been. Mm. That's why somebody like Mamdani wins. It's somebody that they feel they can relate to, somebody that's addressing their problems. How should people, or how should you approach this?
Approach what?
This lack of trust with power. Oh. With power.
It's really scary because society's starting to destabilize because of this. I mean, you know, I was talking on my show about how, you know, I really come from a background of like political theory, kind of, like thinking a little bit about political theory at least. And what you understand about the order in society, the societal order, is that it all rests on the authority of the state. And the authority of the state rests on two things. Force, they have the guns. You know, why don't you break the law? That's the representation of the political order, is that there is a government that passes laws, there are cops that enforce the laws. If we break the laws, the cops take us to jail. So we all recognize, why do people obey the laws? Because the cops have guns. Mm. If you don't obey the laws, they'll kill you. But also, you recognize that there's only 1 million soldiers. There's maybe 1 million cops. There's 300 million people. So they don't have more force than all the people put together. So the other thing that gives the government authority is legitimacy. People think that the government has a right to rule. And that is what is being eroded. The legitimacy of the government, that people believe that we even have a nation, that the government is fair, that the government is efficacious. that the Constitution, the social contract, is valid or has integrity, that the elections are legitimate. Like, that's why they took that so seriously when Trump undermined the elections, because if you say the elections are fake, then you say the government has no legitimacy, then you're saying revolution is a mandate, actually. Mm-hmm. So when the legitimacy of the state is being undermined, they have to rely more on force. The less legitimate the government, the more tyrannical it has to be. And so that's when you see society start to come apart. It's the political violence with the left. It is the tribalism, which is breaking out. It's the conspiracy theorizing. It's even in the way that Trump is trying to change the census 5 years in, gerrymandering the congressional districts. Normally that happens every 10 years. Now it's happening midway through because they're just trying to squeeze out every last seat they can get. Mm-hmm. It's like, this is serious late stage Republic shit. The way they're trying to get money out of everything, the way that they're just motherfucking the laws, abusing them to get as much power as possible. Everyone knows the system's rigged. The way they're trying to buy everybody off with welfare, it's like, this is serious late Republic vibes, and it's all coming apart. And I think then the answer is Napoleon, Caesar. This is the...
Rome.
Rome. It's all on Rome. Exactly.
Yeah. Hey, I'll leave good. It there. I said I don't want to hold Nick too long. It's been a long day. We are going to hang out a little bit. It's New York City. It's a Saturday night. It is snowing outside. I hope you have a coat. I hope you guys enjoyed this first stream back. Thanks, Nick, so much for coming
Great
on here.
Great stream.
First stream back on YouTube in 3 years. And, of course, probably had to be with Nick Fuentes. And hopefully a love speech blessing arrives upon you and a Goyper blessing arrives upon me. Inshallah.
Yes. Inshallah.
Merry Christmas, everybody. Be safe. God bless you. And I'll see you next time.